Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. 'Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to episode, I believe it's either 10 or 11 of the Gringlish podcast. This is our first comedian guest. We have brought David Alfie Ward from BBC TV, BBC Radio, to Athens on the middle seat of an EasyJet flight.
I'm Greek Australian. That's why I look like this, but I sound like this.
Yeah, he's come here to do the first Gringlish stand-up show, and he killed it. It was a good show. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, I had fun. It was different. I may have been a bit drunk.
You're wasted. Something, by the way.
Yes. Cheers. I'm not alcoholic, by the way, everybody that thinks I am. I feel like I'm on holiday here. You know, so I'm here to work, but I'm also an English guy, English-Irish.
In the sun.
In the sun. It means I need to, and then like a beer is like a euro, or this was 2 euro. It's like, well, I have to. It'd be rude not to.
So, okay, the sun's shining.
And then, but before the show, we went for really nice food. Mm. And then the local Greek woman, she gave us, what did she give us?
Yeah, we finished a meal at a traditional taverna. And then at the end, the owner was like, I'm like, let's pay. And she came over with just a jug, not even a bottle, not even capped, just a jug of clear
just
liquid.
Just white, clear liquid. It could have been water. It could have been paint stripper. Yeah. I think it was paint stripper.
It probably was. And he stripped the paint off your skin.
Oh my God. Yeah, because I came out here. And I had a cold the week before I've come out here, you know, it's the time of year you get a cold. And I started to lose my voice. And I flew in Thursday, we kind of went sightseeing, then we went out for some food and some drinks. And about midnight, I was like,
It wasn't like, oh, it's getting worse. It was like, okay, then terrible. And then we just were like, let's get the fuck out.
I have to go. Couldn't speak. And I was like, so scared that George had arranged this show and I wasn't going to be able to speak.
I was thinking, I'm like, how could I, if we can't do it, how am I going to clean it up?
And then
like,
the next morning, you got up, went to the gym and came back with some Strepsils and like medicines stuff. I was like, this guy is shitting himself. But I got through it. And then miraculously after that, the paint stripper just kind of
warmed you
up. I don't
up.
Know what it was.
Probably warmed
this
you
woman,
up.
But after that, I was like, and then we went to the bar and shout out to the bar, Transistor.
Transistor bar, yeah.
Yeah.
That guy was nice, man. Geronimo.
Geronimo, the guy that runs it, like a German Spanish guy. But he was giving us shots of tequila. And I was on at the end of the night. He was giving shots to like, and it was like, great. It was all good and fun, but then I had to go on stage at some point.
I think I was drunk when I first went on stage and running around. And the first show, any shows, you're going to be, you know, ironing out some wrinkles. And I was just a bit wasted before I even got on stage.
It was fine. It was good. It was good. Like, it was good fun. We had a really mixed turnout of lots of different Europeans all over. Some
Turks. They're not European.
Well, okay. And some, was there any Americans in? There were two Americans that came in, but they came in when George was on stage, the other George. Oh. And I think his thick accent
turned them off.
They just couldn't understand it, because I heard them leave and say, I don't know what's going on. I don't know. It was like proper old American dude and his wife, you know, like on their retirement, probably like the ships dock here? Is it like a little stop on their cruise? So I reckon they look like a cruise ship couple.
Mm.
And they're like, I don't know what's going on. And I was like, yeah.
If you came halfway through his set, it'd be...
Yeah, it would have been just this guy talking about...
OCD.
You know, yeah.
So, yeah. I like that bit, though.
He had some great bits. You know, it was so funny. There was a guy that grew up in Walthamstow, where I'm from, in London. Like, Cypriot English. And grown up in London and then moved to Cyprus, and they were here for like a party, 60th birthday or something. And they were loving it, everything I said. Like, you know, I even didn't do the Irish stuff. I didn't do the bit about being a traveller. Because I just was going with what the crowd, like I was...
Traveller as in?
Like a gypsy.
Is that the politically correct
It depends. It's a weird one because... Like, people of English heritage, gypsies, like to be called gypsy. People of Irish heritage like to be called travellers. So it depends really where that person comes from. Like Tyson Fury, the boxer, calls himself the Gypsy King because he's more of English stock.
Mm.
So that's what they like to call themselves.
Do they do much travelling?
What?
I mean, it's Ireland, it's tiny, right?
Well, my family now, or just in general?
In general.
Well, they came, like, I think... Like, they come from, like, the far east of Europe, like, yeah, Romania and stuff, like, yeah.
Turks conquered Constantinople.
And is that in Istanbul, is it? Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Yeah, I thought it was Istanbul. Because I was looking the other day for flights, and I couldn't find any flights to Constantinople. Because I was born with a knee defect. So my knees were born like inwards like that. And that's why I've got fucked knees now as well. But I had to wear like special shoes when I first started walking. And little fucking spastic shoes or something.
And they had to go out.
Yeah, to point my... And they were like, we never see this in Western people. And it was like a genetic throwback of wherever...
Indians.
Wherever my family came from.
Fuck.
I would love to do one of those, you know, spit tests.
Yeah, but you know they're just a...
Are they bullshit?
Google, the founder of Google's wife runs Ancestry.com, which is the biggest database of DNA.
Yeah, but that's not bullshit, surely.
That's...
No, I'm talking about, you know when you spit in it and it's like, oh, your DNA is like 7% Estonian or something.
No, it's true, but like, you're giving your DNA voluntarily to the government.
The government got my... You think the government ain't got your DNA?
No.
Yes, man, the government got your DNA.
From when?
They swab your arsehole in the night.
Nah, bro.
Hey, do you remember when COVID tests?
Didn't do them.
You didn't do one COVID test?
No.
Come on, you...
Why would I do a COVID test? I just make fake documents.
You were travelling.
Cut that out.
You never did one COVID test?
No.
Oh,
well. Especially in Mexico, where the main place I flew. I'm just like, they're like, they didn't even care. They're like, they asked me if I was COVID positive. I'm like, nah, I'm fine.
Well, I don't care about the government having my stuff. I got arrested once in the UK and they take your DNA.
What?
Yeah. You have to. It has to go on the database.
Why?
Because what if you murder someone one day and they find your DNA's there and they run it through the database and they haven't got you?
But like... It's an invasion of privacy. You just stole some candy from the corner store. What's
I didn't. I, you know, I got in a bit of a hustle in a pub, you know, just standard English guy, Irish guy, Saturday night. You know, maybe it got a bit out of control and I was taken into, just to spend the night. I didn't really, like, get
charged. They're swabbing your asshole now.
They cut your hair.
What?
Take your fingerprints. Take your mouth. Well, just put their dick in your mouth. I don't know why, but that's what they said they had to do for DNA.
Was it a policeman or was it just another inmate?
Yeah, it was like, I've got to take your DNA. I was like, why? You're dressed the same as me. You're both in the grey tracksuits.
No, it's process.
Was like, no.
Standard process.
Like, oh, yeah, knob cheese it was. It was great. What, were Greek guys circumcised? So they got foreskin?
No.
You got foreskin, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
Nah, man.
I don't
have foreskin.
Why? Do you like it? Go rid of it?
I was kept on. It was too tight, apparently. And that's not a brag.
I can't clean my cock. I got to cut it off.
No, it happened when I was like three.
Why? Doesn't it happen when you're born?
So it kept on getting infected because it was.
Wait, you personally?
My dick. I'm talking about my dick.
I thought that was the reason why people do it.
Oh, no. I'm talking about my dick. I was born with.
Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Of like a tiny dick and an even smaller foreskin. It's like a water balloon.
Jesus Christ.
And they said to my mum they have to cut it off, huh? Because it kept on getting infected because it wasn't like.
You know how if someone cuts your arm off, their phantom lum? Phantom arm?
Phantom limb.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you ever get that with your.
Like a phantom foreskin?
Yeah.
I mean, I would maybe I just feel, my belly feels warm today. Oh, what's that cheesy smell? Huh? Yeah. Oh, it's unhygienic down there. Oh, that's phantom foreskin. Oh, yeah, no, that bacteria, phantom foreskin. Because it's dirty. Foreskin, I think foreskin dicks are disgusting, man. When I'm in the locker room at the gym and stuff, and I look
at only white dudes. In all of my experience in gyms and stuff, it's only white dudes who take the cock out.
And it's always old white dudes.
White dudes in general.
I was at the gym not so long ago, and this white dude, I'm sitting after a swim. I was like, just trying to recover my breathing. I'm sitting on the bench in like around the lockers. This white dude bent over in front of me to go into the bottom locker. But he was just ass cracking.
Nah, old men don't give a fuck.
Old men don't give a fuck in the gym. At change all. You know, at they just, all. I think they just go there to get their dicks out. You know?
Air it out. I remember this girl who kept, one time told me, she's like, I hate men's nipples. They should be taken off.
I hate men's nipples.
I'm like, why?
But you know why we've got nipples?
Because we're going to be women.
Well, yeah. Before the old. We get the old nipples, they're useless. Yeah. You ever have a girl play with your nipples in the bedroom?
Yeah. Didn't do nothing for me. I got salami nipples.
I got these big old ping pong-y things.
Ping pong?
They're just like big and round.
Yeah, I got salami nipples.
My sister used to say they look like pink ping pong balls, you know?
Mine are brown, so they kind of look like an Italian pepperoni, like a Sicilian pepperoni.
It's horrible. Sometimes if I'm like, a girl seeing me topless for the first time, I'll like do this, like tiggle myself.
You'll do that?
Yeah, I'll do that just before, like, so my nipples get hard. And then, you know, so then they look smaller, innit? See? Look. See? Like that. Just a little tiggle. But, bruv, sometimes in the middle of the night, I wake up, I'm just tiggling myself like this. I'm just, like, touching myself in the night. Oh, I keep ripping out my hair in the night as well. Like, literally, I'm losing my hair. And it's really naturally curly, what I have got. But since going through this breakup, I've been, like, stressed and shit. Like, eating cake every day, putting on weight, and then getting stressed about my looks. And I'm waking up in the night, just, like, clumps of hair coming out.
Itching it or curling it?
I'm just, like, pulling the knots, you know?
Comfort thing you do?
This is a comfort thing. This is a I hate myself. What I'm saying is, if you ever sleep next to me, not that, you know.
For all the future.
Yeah, anyone that's ever watching this, if you're going to maybe sleep next to me, even if it's just like a mate and we're like, oh shit, look, you've got to crash in the same bed tonight, I might be doing this.
Yeah, waking up. You wake up with hair everywhere.
Just hard nipples.
And hard nipples.
Hard nipples, just hair everywhere. Just. look like a cancer patient porn star.
Yeah, she wanted to get, she's like, it does nothing for men. There's no pleasure from it. I'm like, she's like, it's useless. I get rid of it. And I'm like, well, some dudes find it pleasurable. She's like, yeah, but you don't need it. You don't need that pleasure. I'm like, read clitoris. I was going to be a penis. Now you don't need it. Sometimes it's pleasurable. I'll give it to my nipples.
It's the, like it's the main pleasure.
Yeah,
for women.
But if that, if she's, you know, I'm like, I'll take,
I'm,
you can take my nipples.
I find one, but I've heard.
I've heard some,
I've heard
things
good
too.
Things, yeah. Yeah. I've heard some really good.
Your mic's at the back, bring it up here.
Hold on, my mic. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because you know what? I opened my top to play with my nipples.
Yeah.
That always happens.
We just got your neck audio.
No. but I had an audition recently for an Amazon movie where I had to play a guy in a sex dungeon.
You owned it, or you?
No, were... I was just a guy in a sex dungeon. One scene for some famous British producer director. So I didn't get it in the end. But they wanted a bigger, hairier guy, like a bear kind of guy, in like being suspended up with nipple clamps on.
Would have had a ball with you.
And I did the self tape at home, and I put like clothes pegs on my nipples. Yeah. And I, you know, I've got my phone downstairs on charge. I would have shown, I probably deleted the picture, but I had like a satchel bag because I had to have a bag, and just clothes pegs, and I didn't even get it, you know.
That's fucked.
Yeah, like all that. I was like, come on, the casting director. I sent it to my agent, and she was like, oh, everyone in the office had a good laugh about that, blah 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 blah. Like, don't be showing it to everyone, like the secretary and shit. Like, they don't need to know.
Dude,
my agent just sends me anything. Like, I got two agents, and I can't name names, but one of them just will send me, without even okaying it, just like, yeah, you'll do this. And I'm like, will I? I had to roll around as a dog once.
Nah.
15 grand, though.
$15,000? Pounds?
Euros. For a Norwegian advert. And I had to... be a dog, because the advert was like, oh, like it was for like a loan company, and it was like, oh, a loan, like make money your best friend, and what's man's best friend? It's a dog. So they wanted a human to wear a suit but be a dog, so like he's business but he's also your best friend. And I had to do this tape, my ex-girlfriend like feeding me fucking nuts out of her hand, and I'm like getting my belly rubbed, which I do that anyway. We just found that out. But like, you know, and that's how I found out I was balding, because I was on all fours and she's recording me.
She's recording. You're like, what?
And then I'm like,
fuck?
Oh my god, I'm going bald at the top now as well. And then I was like, oh, it's a bad way.
15 grand. I can't believe how much. That's insane.
Well, because you know, it's demoralizing. Huh?
It's demeaning. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, well, it's only. I think if it was going to be shown in the UK, I would have done it.
Mm.
But
Norway, who cares?
But Norway, innit?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I might go to Norway one day. They'll be like, oh, it's the dog man. Oh, shut up. You know? Maybe I'm a big hit in Norway then. You know? And I go do stand-up tours as the dog man. You know? Go on stage, eating nuts out of the audience hand. You know?
My mate in Denmark, he did one ad in a kayak for a sports company.
Mm.
And it was just on billboards, like photos on billboards. And he always got recognized as the kayak guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like the weirdest thing, but...
You're the guy from the kayak, yeah. I don't know. I've never really been recognized.
No.
Like, at football, I get recognized a little bit for, like, podcasting and stuff. But a lot of the stuff I do is radio mainly and podcasts. So it's like every now and then someone might recognize my voice. Which is weird.
They won't see you, but they'll hear you. They're like,
yeah, I've got that. Yeah, or they'll recognize me from some kind of like mental health talk, and then they'll come up to me and be like, I tried to kill myself last week, and I'm like, you're a literal stranger to me, you know. But
you should have.
They're like, no, I can't say that. I'm a mental health ambassador. You know, can't say that. There doesn't need to be a cult, though. You know.
A what?
A cult.
Cult.
A cult. C-U-L-L. Cult.
Of what?
Humans.
You think there needs to be?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
There's too many humans, huh?
Where are you starting on the cult?
Because I know where I'm starting.
Anyone that believes the government can control the weather, you're gone. You're gone. If you believe that the trails that planes leave...
But you have heard of cloud seeding, though.
Don't turn this into a Joe Rogan podcast.
No, but like in Dubai, they drop a certain chemical in the...
Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. 'Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Air, and then they'll attach because shit won't form out of nothing, but the moisture will form to something already made.
Right, but no, what I'm talking about is people that think, you know, when planes,
their trails, they think it's like
they think it's chemicals that they're like
chemtrail stuff.
They're infecting our brains with. I think them people should just go.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of them? You know.
I'm thinking like.
Sorry if you're a chemtrail flat earther or whatever. You're a flat earther.
No. We were the Greeks. Greeks were the first to. Confirm that the world is round.
The first to do.
Yeah, they organized like someone here at the same time in Greece and someone in Egypt in Alexandria, to like count, make like certain assessments of the sun to the stars to the earth and all this shit. They're like, oh well, if it's different, if you can see the sky differently, like it's curved. Whatever. I'm not a mathematician.
Was it the Greeks that?
Invented pretty much everything.
There was something I wanted to say there, but it left me because I believe that the Earth is flat and I think I don't. But my friend is a pilot and the other day he had somebody come on. He had come somebody. You know when you leave the plane and they're like the pilot's doors open, they're doing their paperwork or whatever. Just knock on the door. I was like, can I ask you a quick question? He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And he's like, you know when you're flying, do you constantly have to point the nose of the plane down to go around the curvature of the earth? And he was like, no, that's not how.
Fucking stupid. Get off my plane.
Yeah, he was like, no. And the guy was just like, thank you very much, and walked off. And you could tell, he said, you could tell that, like, in his flat earth ahead, that he had just confirmed that the earth is flat because otherwise, you know, if the earth was round, you're flying, you'll just go straight out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
No, that's not how gravity works, you know, like.
There was this guy on YouTube, it was on TV. He's like, if I over 300-400 meters, I'm gonna take a photo, and there's gonna be a board, like a flat board with a pinhole in it. And then it's gonna be one here, camera, one here, and then one 300-400 meters down the road.
Yeah.
And it's just gonna be flat exactly through, and we're going to see that the light is gonna go exactly through because the world is flat. And it didn't. And he's just there looking at to the TV presenters like,
have you seen?
What the fuck?
Have you seen like a mock-up? It's like a picture of the Earth, and then it's got like the pyramids and the Statue of Liberty and the like Eiffel Tower. It's like, this is what flat earthers see on a clear day. You know, just like everything.
Oh, yeah. It's in a line. But yeah, so you have... We met 3 years ago in the green room in Barcelona. I was just starting out. You'd already been doing it for a bloody decade or something.
Yeah, about that. About 9 years at that point, yeah.
Yeah. And you've seen... You've performed a couple thousand times. You're miles ahead of me. And so I've been pretty much, you know, grilling your
experience, trying to learn everything these last few days. When you look back on all the years that you've done so far,
yeah,
on all the work that it takes too, do you see like the hardest bit being writing, the hardest bit being getting back on stage, the hardest bit being the politicking of comedians? What do you really think is the hardest part of being a comedian?
Again, this is that there's not a definitive answer for that.
No, but for you.
For me,
yeah.
It's churning out new material and being confident enough for that.
Yeah.
I'm dyslexic, so like sitting down, sometimes I'm like, you know, some people are like, oh, every Sunday I go to a coffee shop and I have at least 2 hours writing. And so I was like, okay, I'll try that.
Yeah.
You know, and I sit there and I just stare at this pad. And it just, it gives me that anxiety that school gave me.
Yeah.
In terms of, oh, I need to perform and you know, I need to write. And that's not how I write. I brainstorm ideas. So, you know, if I have an idea, it's like, oh, I've been to Athens, and then I'll write Athens in the middle of a brainstorm, and then I'll, all the things that I can think of that happened here, you know, the food I got, the people, the culture, the history, whatever. And then that will give me a clearer idea of the subject matter. And then I'll go on stage at like an open mic and I'll be like, oh, I came from Athens and I've already got all these strings that I can pull from. You know, I don't necessarily know what I'm gonna say yet, but I know that I've expanded, that I know certain type of dessert that you took me for that I didn't know before. And then, you know, there might be a Greek person in and I can relate to them. And
yeah.
my stand-up comedy is, as you saw on Friday, is very much, I'm in the room with the audience.
You play the field.
Yeah.
You're not going there like, my biggest fault, like you said, is I go there, I'm like, this is what I'm running and you can't stop me if you try. Whereas you're going there, you know, you got a few up at your sleeve, but you're like, I'm playing the field. Let me see what I'm working with. And you're like, oh, perfect. And then you go down that story that you know is going to be good, but you know that that's what they want because they're in that world. So the Greek Cypriots who were there, you're like, we can go down that road.
Yeah, exactly. That's my style. It's always been my style. It's like, it's not per se just crowd work. So yeah. you're like, you're Matt Rife's who are big in the world now, where it is just, I'm a crowd work comedian. I've heard people are doing like, crowd work solo specials. Hours,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Special. Like, sorry,
Chris D'Elia did that. Yeah.
Sorry, that's bollocks. Yeah. I like fundamentally disagree with that. But as a stand-up, who's a stand-up who does a lot of hosting, a lot of crowd work in my actual set, but you can't be charging people to come in and see you, and the most interesting thing is them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's just a talk.
Because, you know, it's just a talk, and yeah, it's fine, but you need... So what I try and do is I bring the audience in and then, you know, find out something about the audience, and then I'll go, okay, I've got a story about that. And sometimes it's not even it's not material that I've used before, but I might be like, oh, fuck, that happened to me there, and then I just start talking about it, you know? And, you know, that happened to me recently. I can't remember where I was. And I actually closed on a bit that was just a story. I was in a place called Norwich in Norfolk in England, and it just turned out that somebody was a stripper, or an ex-stripper or something like that. And I had a story about the time me and my friends ordered a stripper. I've never told it as a stand-up bit, but I knew it was funny. So, like, you can do that, and that's how I do it, and I hope that material comes from that. So I might, oh, shit, I spoke about that stripper bit. That's actually a really funny story, so let me try and keep going to that, doing that at open mics and adding to it and taking away. Like, you know, I said to you yesterday, you know, a very experienced comedian said to me, a new bit can be a new bit for 6 months because you're constant. You can, you know, until you can never say you're 100% happy with it, you know. And it's about, okay, they like it when I do, you know. And it's, that's how I write. And so the most hard part for me is writing and that churning out new
material.
Like
some comedians like Louis C.K., he says I never write. He just does that. It's like working and teasing through stuff every time he goes up on stage, but.
Yeah,
you never really write.
That's pretty much how I am now. Yeah. I think once upon a time I would have written. I remember the last time I wrote, I was doing a show in Spain. So my ex was Spanish. Oh, she grew up in Spain at least. And I arranged with a local Irish bar to put on a night there. And, you know, we arranged, you know, a fee and they were going to take the door, whatever. And I had my friend James Regal come, because he lives in Spain, like jump on the train and come and support me. And my ex put a hell of a lot of pressure on me to write new material for that particular show. One, because they had found a clip of me at a big comedy club in London and it was my current set.
Mm.
So they would kind of put it on their socials and I was like, oh God, some of these people are gonna, they're gonna hear this. But also, her mum was coming and she didn't want me to be too rude and some of my material was too sexual or this or that. She would always say, and I remember...
I had it even more.
So I went, I remember being at hers on the day of the show and being like, fuck, and trying to like think of stories from my teenage years, like funny stories. I've got some funny stories from my teenage years and like write it. And I came up with this really good bit about COVID, you know, this was like last year, but it was actually a bit gonna take the piss out of how stupid we were, some of the shit that we did. You know, I'm not saying I'm anti it, but there was some stuff where like, but didn't even make sense. But
yeah, we were running like around like a headless chook for something.
And I had this good bit that I thought was, well, I wrote it and I was like, this is a good bit. And, you know, I was already nervous because before I went on stage, I said to her mum, I said, hey, I might be a bit like rude, you know, I might be a bit sexual, hoping that she would go, of course, you know, do your thing, man, I don't care. And she went, oh, okay, like, and just gave me like a horrible look, like,
what a bitch.
And I was like, ooh. And that made me think, fuck, right? So I was like, I'll do all this new stuff, I'll do more of my cleaner material, and I hated them and they hated me. And because I went on and I said, oh yeah, you know, I was going to do this new bit that I wrote about, you know, the restrictions. So I was like, oh yeah, you know, the pandemic. And then people were like, the scamdemic. And I was like, oh. And then I was already kind of like, my back was up because I was like, I've got so much writing on this because I want her mum to, you know, and her friends were there and stuff like that. And I sometimes can get a little bit, I can see red on stage. If I feel like you've heckled me and it's not really, it's just absolutely like, I was just like, you're fucking Daily Mail reading racist that live in Spain. Because she doesn't live far from Benidorm, right? So I was like, you fucking Benidorm, you still
come. Not at her, but
no,
like...
No, in general to the crowd. I just started going at them. And yeah, so the last time I was like, okay, I'm right, here's new material and I'm gonna do it. I ate shit. Oh my God, it was horrible. And then I was like, fine, I'll do some rude stuff about fingering and stuff. And then her mum was disimpressed. So, you know, she said, oh, you know, her mum didn't bring all of her friends because she didn't want her friends to see me talk about sex.
Who is she?
I know, it was just, it was insane, the whole thing. I'm gonna write a whole hour about this insane family. So, and it's going to be
amazing.
Material.
That's a good way to see like struggles and stuff. And
well, it's ironic because she'd always be like, "Oh, you should write new material. You should churn out new material."
And now
blah,
she's
blah, blah, blah. And now she's going to be a whole fucking hour, which is going to get like thousands of views on YouTube or whatever. I'm going to push it like a motherfucker. I'm going to go on all the radio. I'm going to tour it around the country. I'm going to bring it to Athens.
Man.
Yeah, stand up is changing. So it's all about clips and reels and. And where before it was like, I think people had a bit more trust in, you go to a comedy club or you go to somebody who runs a comedy night, that you trust that they've booked somebody that's funny, right?
Yeah.
But now it's like, oh, I've not seen that person on my reels.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's two sides of the story because, you know, like, you know, you got the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which I'm kind of against because it's just, it's a bit of a rip-off. You know, I come from a very poor working class background. You know, like, it's mainly for middle class people or people with money from mummy and daddy to go, oh, mummy, daddy, can I have 10 grand to take a show to Edinburgh?
And how much it costs?
Like, minimum 10 grand.
Fucking hell.
You know?
That will tour America with 10 grand.
But back in the day, it's the biggest arts and comedy festival in the world. So you had to go there and spend that money and hope that the right agent, the right TV producer, the right person is in the audience, or you can invite them to come and see you, and they're like, yeah, you're a star. That demographic has changed. I'm a bit unsure why people still do it, or at least pay what, you know, if everyone just boycotted it for a year, the fees would come down. But everyone knows in Edinburgh, all the Airbnbs, everyone, the venues, they know that they can exploit it, right?
I was looking for next year, for August next year, for Airbnb, 4 or 5 grand was the minimum.
Yeah, exactly. And that's before you've bought your equipment and your, you know, feed yourself when you're up there, and flyers, and hire a room, and, you know. And you might make that back. Some people do, because you do a bucket at the end, and people always put 5, 10 or in, whatever.
But, well, you don't sell tickets.
See, and that also depends. You can go somewhere like the Pleasance. There's so many different options at the Fringe. You can do the free Fringe, which is just a free, you get a free room. You have to pay to put yourself in the magazine and all that. So it's not free, but it's free. And then people just will turn up voluntarily.
Yeah.
Or you've got the Pleasance, which is, again, thousands to even hire one of their rooms. But they'll have a box office where you sell tickets, so you kind of know on the day, oh, I've only got 10 in today, or I've got 50 or whatever. Which I don't know. That, again, it's like, is that more stressful or less stressful? Because, you know,
you have to make cover your investment.
But, you know, before, like I said, you had to go there to try and get noticed. And now, you know,
you can invest 3-4 grand into camera gear and editor and do content over 6 months.
This is what people are doing now. They're building their own profile through TikTok and clips and reels and Instagram, and then, you know, getting a following, building up, I don't know, 50,000 followers, 100,000 followers, enough that then they can do like a small tour of the UK, you know, and then hiring a room and paying someone. And back like before the pandemic, if you wanted someone to shoot a special for you, and we're talking like, you know, 3-4 high-res 4K cameras at the audience and all that, you're looking at 3-4 grand. Yeah. Now, it's such a market that the market's been driven down. You know, new people are coming through in terms of media students and stuff like that. Cameras are a lot more accessible as well, that you can probably get someone to do it for between 500 and a grand.
Yeah.
Like, and a good, to a good level, you know? So that's what the great thing about social media. You know, I sound like an old dinosaur because I've not got with the times so much. I don't put any content out because I still believe that comedy is in the room, and you saw that on Friday. Like, I'm these people and me, we're together. We're going on a journey for the next 40 minutes. But that's ultimately not going to sell tickets, you know?
It's what's going to give them their money's worth after the fact, but you got to do the dancing and bullshit on Instagram.
So, and then, you know, but it's good that the power has been given back to the people. Yeah, they can then put on YouTube, and you see it's not just kind of working level comedians like me. You'll see people like, you know, Shane Gillis will just put a special out on YouTube because, you know, you can monetize that, and that's going straight to you as well. So there is, it's two sides of the coin of one. Yeah, the demographics changed in terms of to shift tickets. Now people want to know your numbers in terms of followers. But it also gives the power back to the comedian to make the content that they want as well, because before, you know, I know people that have had Netflix, Amazon specials and all that, and it was like, well, you can't say that, change the wording of that slightly. But you shoot your own special, you're the director, the editor.
And at the end of the day, I feel like if those companies, if TV, you know, companies like Netflix and stuff, they come to you at some point, you can try and get there early without your followers, without your specials that you've already done, or and
on the other hand, you can do that much later. You have your big following. You've done all this touring around the world on your own dime, on your own following. And it's a different negotiation then. It's like, we're going to put you on. We're going to create you. Or
100%.
We're going to share this.
And you can walk away from it as well.
Yeah.
If you don't like what they're offering, you can say, do you know what?
Yeah.
I reckon I can sell, you know, like Louis C.K. did.
Yeah.
And I'll
he didn't just, walk away.
No, he no. but in terms of hit the model of, I'll just shoot it and sell it.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
my website.
Yeah.
You know, and.
And there's no other way. Like, that's the way I say. Even so, like, what I like to do is, and I've talked to my developer friend today about this. At the door, I don't want them to just, you know, pay cash and have a seat. I want them to just scan a QR code. Name, email, and then once they click submit, it goes to my Instagram. So I collected the email and they follow my Instagram and they're paid. Like, grab a seat.
Is there tech for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a Google form.
All right.
It's a QR code, which is free to scan and create a QR code. Just has their email, they just type in their email, and then once they click submit, they go to my Instagram.
Yeah, there's a comic back home that always just comes with like an A4 QR code.
Oh, okay.
And he just fucking just sellotapes it to the wall behind him. You know, it's big enough that they can scan it from their seat.
Yeah.
And he's always like, oh, you know, if you like me, follow me and all that. Like,
it's a bit of a head. I wouldn't do it on stage. Like a QR code on stage. I'm like, let's do the comedy on stage. Let's do this at the door.
Yeah, I used to have a phone case and at the back of it had a QR code that led to a link tree of all my socials. And I would stand at the door, like, scan this. But, like, again, it felt too bottlenecky.
Yeah.
Because it was too, like, you know, I'm standing there, one per, and then the per, it's kind of getting congested. So people, like, they just want to go.
One thing I liked.
So it's like, how do you do it? Do you get a hoodie and just have
So this is what I was thinking. I found a LED strip, and you could type anything and just put at George Morlos official. And then each comedian that comes will be at Gutter Man Lee's George, at David Alfie Ward. And it's just like, comedian. Tag. So it's like, it's not too obtrusive, and you don't need to say follow. It's like, well, you know what at name means.
Some clubs do that. So like Top Secret Comedy Club in Covent Garden, they've got a whiteboard. It's actually black, but it's that material. And then they've got a white pen and they write, you know, hosts, act one, act two. Yeah. And with their social media, I've seen... If you know, they've got two rooms, so you do downstairs is like 250 and upstairs like 125. So you quit, you do your set and then you run upstairs or down wherever.
Yeah.
So they start 120 minutes before. It's like a six system. And then they've got a new club around the corner. But so if you're saying just from the old club, there's what, 375 people in, 400 people in. I've seen maybe 1% take a picture or, you know, of that. And it's like, people are lazier.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, so one thing, when I was trying to kick off the speaking tour and the personal brand idea for entrepreneurship, I'd put it up on a whiteboard or something at these university talks, and it's about 200-300 people sometimes. And a couple of people, 5-10 people. And then when I was like, one time I'm like, at the end I was like, we're doing a giveaway on my Instagram, every show, every event. We're giving away $20 or we're giving away some free shit.
Yeah.
We're picking from people who follow me tonight. All of a sudden, like, we're talking about like 90-95% of people follow. And then we're like, yeah, you win this $20 hat, you win this, free
session. It needs to be like that incentive.
Yeah. Which is so internet marketing type shit.
Yeah.
Like, fuck if it works.
Well, I was about to say that same comedy club, you know, no one takes pictures of the board with the ads. But they always make the MC say at the end of the night, if you can prove that you've liked and followed our page, we'll give you a free shot.
Yeah.
So people literally queue and go, look, I'm following, and then they get a free shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's so gimmicky, but this is the game.
100%, but, you know, it's... I suppose we need to find a way, like, I'm about to launch a new game, a new dice game. So I try and, you know, I'm not like George, but I try and put my finger in a few little business ideas, usually around football.
Yeah.
You know, football is a big passion of mine. I do football broadcasting and podcasting. And so I'm part of a team that's made, it's essentially two dice, and you can play football. It's like a football themed dice game, and we're really hoping it's going to be good. But really, now I've got to do vox pops, and I've got to go out on the street, and I've got to get people playing. And it could be that, like, if you follow us, there's a chance to win this or that, you know, or you get free, you know, give away one for free, but they have to scan the, you know,
man,
whatever.
It seems so silly, but it's these social, not gimmicks, but like these social things. So, like, especially on Instagram, what I see work is, so for example, there's this comedian who just an open mic really early, and he will go into a coffee place every day, a new one, and he'll go to a new coffee shop until, let's say, you want a cappuccino, double sugar, right? Skim milk. Until they know his order.
Right.
And that's the thing.
And then he leaves.
And then he'll be like, hey, it's day four. They're going on day four.
Right, okay.
And it's just like, you always have this tiny kind of social experience where, like, eventually they remember your order, and he's just kind of documenting that. How long does it actually take? And, I don't know, I think it's those small social interactions and social kind of gimmicks that sometimes that work so well for some comedians. But that could be the shtick with, like, the board game. So, like, another guy who launched a watch company. Cheap watches, no quality, nothing special about the design. And old bloke, maybe 50, maybe 45, and he'll travel the world with whatever business stuff he's doing, and he'll hold an iPad with the time. He'll announce it, and he'll just be live streaming on Instagram. And the first person to find out where he is and come up to him and say, I love your journey, gets a free watch. He's gone all around the world, and sometimes it's like minutes. People come running, fucking get it, love your journey, randomly, and it blew up his brand. It's all these, like, social gimmick type stuff that go really, really well for pushing sales and stuff.
There was a woman, there was an intern, and she was, like, smashing shit up. I think she was smashing cans of... She was an intern for, like, an energy drink or something like that. And I think she said to, the CEO, like, if I can gain 100,000 followers on our thing, you have to hire me. And he's like, fine. And she just, like, started, like, smashing, like, every day a different way, like baseball bat, just, like, getting a can of this drink, throwing it off a building or whatever. And people were, like, engaging and following, and, like, you know, day seven of trying to get 100,000 followers so I get a full time. And people were like, hell yeah, duh. You know, and it's essentially just a woman littering. You know?
it's a weird world, man. It's a weird internet world we live in, where I think we, especially my generation, our type of humor is absurdism. As long as it's absurd, it doesn't need to make a point. That's why I think Joker, like, we saw Joker yesterday, atrocious.
So, like,
if you're trying to make some artistic, like, just, point.
It
was basically,
the best part was when the thing blew up.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, finally he's going to get away.
Then he just, like, goes and she's like, I don't want you. And then, sorry if we're ruining this, but honestly, we're not ruining it. Don't watch it. Don't watch it. And, you know, it was just...
But, yeah, like, that's just our... humor of my generation is pretty crazy. I mean, I love absurd. Like, we would rather see, like, more entertaining than... Like, it'll get more views, more likes than a comedian being on stage saying a decent bit. What will get more views is just a goat...
Fainting.
Fantastic.
I've seen a goat going brah, and then somebody making that into some kind of
beat.
Yeah, and like blew up. Yeah. You know, but there's a comic that's worked on a bit for 6 months.
Yeah,
and he's cut all the fat off that joke, and and everyone like keeps crawling. You know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I don't want to go back to, but I don't want to be that. You know, the old man screaming at the clouds, you know?
But there's also the thing, because you can be like you, but you're killing it on stage, but that you don't do anything on Instagram, but you can be killing on Instagram. You get on stage, like there was this Greek comedian who killed on Instagram, really, really good at engaging, really good at stupid meme clip bullshit, got on stage. First.
But there was a guy that went viral, like fucking viral in the UK. I don't personally know, I've never met him, but he is a mutual friend of mine, and he had this bit that blew up, and he was basically doing a goal celebration in slow motion.
Oh, yeah, he did it at the Blacker. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And as far as I'm aware, very nice guy, but very early on in his stand-up career, and then went fucking viral.
Yeah.
So then, like, some big football, you know, brand, I think they wanted him to come and do, like, 40 minutes at a corporate event with all, like, footballers and agents and stuff like that. Like, he's barely doing 10, yeah, you know? And they paid him, like, thousands. I don't know the specific numbers. And he just couldn't do it because you can blow up too quickly.
Yeah.
You know? What the ramifications are of that, I don't know. Because back in the day, if you got seen by a good agent too soon,
yeah,
then they're never seeing you again. Like, back when I started 12 years ago, you know, I was a bit of a cocky twat, and I thought, well, I deserve to be at the best agents, and, you know, I should be on Apollo in, like, a year, you know, because I was a cocky prick. So I'd write to all these agents, like, come and see me, and some of them did, and they were like, oh, you're not ready.
Yeah.
You know? And I'd be like, oh, okay, it was a bit of humble pie, yeah, but also, doesn't matter how fucking good I got after that, they wouldn't come and see me.
Second chance.
Because... oh, I saw that guy. He's, yeah, not good enough. You know?
How did you get your agents now? Like, how did you eventually get good agents?
I don't have an agent for live booking.
Mm.
For stand-up, no. Because the agents that I've been offered, I'm like, no. And I know TV producers and all the, like, TV warm-up and everything I've done. I've got that off my own back. Mm. And then I'll message out to the TV producers and I'm like, hey, so-and-so wants to sign me. You're a TV producer. You're the kind of person that I'd want them to talk to. Mm. What's your advice on working with them? Because, you know, you must have had a, like, you know, heard from, like, worked with them or spoke to them. And they've been like, yeah, no, you can do better. And which is fine, because I look at their roster, and I can kind of think, well, you know, so they're good or they're bad, you know, whatever. But I look at the roster and the clubs they're playing, and they're the same clubs I'm playing.
Yeah.
So why am I going to give someone 12-15%
of what you're already
making? What I'm already making?
Yeah,
it's only there's three agencies in the UK that, if they signed up, if they had approached me, I would.
Yeah, they are.
It's Avalon, Off the Curb, and Blue Book.
Hmm.
I will work a little bit for Blue Book now. I'm starting to break in. There's a boat on the Thames right by the House of Parliament, and it's a comedy club on the weekend.
Oh wow!
Yeah, Tuesday is a new material night. And it's on a boat, and it's one of the sickest venues because you don't know it's there. And that's run by Blue Book. It's how they give them their acts, like, stage time.
I was thinking about doing, just sitting in, staying at my mate Mills' couch for, like, maybe a month, and just smashing shows as much as I can.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to think as well, like, London, you're going to have... they're not all going to be... you're not going to be playing in the best clubs in London.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not ready for that. You know,
obviously, yeah.
I'm not going to blow smoke up your arse.
No, of course. But it's also like you need...
but you need stage time. You need stage time. You can get that, you know, and I can probably get you in at some places and ask for recommendations of the places that I wouldn't know. But, yeah, if you could come to London for a month.
Mm.
You know, I'm working on getting my own place as well, so, if, you know, well,
yeah, mate.
Hopefully if I get that... well, you know, you're always welcome to come over. But it's sort of going back to, like, what's the demographic now of, if, like, that guy that went viral, but he's too soon to gone viral, he can just probably go back and still make content and still work up, because he's doing it off his own back. He's not relying on agents.
Yeah.
And that is good, I suppose.
That's the thing, like, he has the ability to go viral. Like, that's the...
I suppose everyone's got the ability to go viral.
Well, no, well, look,
there's a woman that spoke about spitting on a dick.
Yeah.
And she made a million off
but
it.
But she didn't do that. The guy who filmed it did that.
Yeah, but where's the guy that filmed it now? Do you know who
she's
that
suing
is?
Him.
Huh?
She's suing him.
Is she actually?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it ruined her life, apparently.
It's not ruined her.
No, I know, but that's her case. That's what she's saying.
Is that true?
No, she's a millionaire.
You've made that up.
I swear to God, I saw it.
Because she's got her own podcast called Talk or something. You know, like you know, which is like part of, what's that guy that's trying to box now as a YouTuber? You know, they're two brothers. They were YouTubers and they box now. Logan.
Logan Paul.
Yeah, but the other one, the fucking 20 younger one. Anyway, his company that run podcasts and produce and stuff like that signed her.
Okay.
So she's on like £1 million contract and she's got her own podcast now called Talk To Her or whatever.
Yeah.
Where she gets all these like, you know... It's a... You'd like to think it's a flash in the pan. She probably doesn't have much
talent.
Yeah,
but what
whatever.
I'm saying is like... But for people who are consistently making content, they're consistently going viral.
Yeah, I
get
that,
they know the keys to the...
George, but my point is, the guy doing the Vox Pops and interviewing him, he isn't a millionaire.
No, but he's made other things go viral. Not like that viral, but...
You know?
You're right, but I think knowing how to interview people to make it go viral, that's the kind of skill I'm talking about. To want to work on.
Yeah.
Like, only the last 3 months of doing content myself, I'm like... Because I've done videos for 7-8 years. Nothing ever went viral. And then 3 months of really, really just trying and testing stuff, we've sent multiple videos viral. And it's only because of looking at feedback loops, looking on a daily basis what is and what isn't working, and then just doubling down on what is working.
Yeah.
And now, like, I think at the start of this year and maybe halfway through this year when I was in Barcelona and I knew no one wanted to give me longer sets beyond, like, 10 minutes, I'm like, they're like, you have to send us material, like, you've got to bring crowd and all this stuff. I'm like, there's other people here who haven't done that, and they've done it for less than a year, and they're not bringing crowd. They're like, yeah, you're going to have to work it out. I'm like, I got to do this on my own, because if I'm not, if you don't have the power to say yes, to say no, to be able to put a show on your own and to host and do this, you're just waiting for others.
And that is, I'm definitely guilty of that, waiting for others. Like, you know, I, you know, in parts, you know, I have my own personal drive and, you know, I have a business called Under the Lights where we take comedy events to football fans and, you know, that's getting a lot of love and one day we kind of want to own a plethora of sports podcasts and it'll be under that same umbrella, like an Under the Lights production. Or whatever, but so there's part of that where I have drive, but then when it comes to other things, I'm like, oh, I'm just hoping that one day somebody's like, you're a star, right? You're, you know, some guy with a cigar in his mouth, like, this guy's a star, you know?
I don't know, I just don't have any hope in that department. I feel like I got to work for everything. Nothing's going to happen
for like, me. And it's definitely mindset, and I am very guilty of having a weak mindset because...
But it's worked, too.
Of course, like, you know, it's got me this far, but, like, you know, I could be further, but, you know, very I have a bit of a defeatist mentality, not always, but, like, my mum was very negative, so growing up, like, my mum had a tough life, you know? So it was always like, that shit don't happen for us, you know? That, you know, don't get your hopes up. Like, I wanted to be an actor. Like, no, that don't happen.
That's for other people.
That's for other people. And I'd be lying. All this shit I've done, I've toured the fucking world doing stand-up, I've performed for the Sultan of Brunei, whatever. But still there's a little bit like, oh, that up there?
Not for you.
That's not for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's when that's inherently drummed into you.
That's what I try and explain to some people.
It's very hard for me to
It's hard, man. And like, I really had that mentality, especially when I lived here in Victoria. Like, when you're in an environment where no one has and no one is living a good life, happy, doing amazing things, driving nice cars or whatever it might be, you're like, it's not possible. You really just don't see it to be possible. And which is such an ingrained belief. It's a culture that becomes a culture of not achieving. And then that's what changed the last year. I'm like, I've been doing this entrepreneurship thing for 13 years, and on the 13th year it worked, and now I feel like I can do anything. No one can tell me what I can't do. They have no right to. I just don't believe in. But I'm also like, I'm not unrealistic. I'm not delusional about what I can and can't do. But I just know the work, I can put the time and the work in. I'm willing to commit ridiculous hours, ridiculous grind to it. So I just won't take, you can't do that for an answer anymore.
Yeah, and that's kind of where, like, you know, I think I am there because I've done a lot, I'm doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I don't know. It's definitely still a little voice.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what's stopping me doing content. Like, what are the backlash? What people are like, this guy's not funny. It's, you know, whatever. You know?
And again, like, I get angry at that. I get angry. I'm like, no one can fucking tell me no. Not because I think I'm better. It's not about that. Like, what fucking right do you have to tell me I can't do something? What right? Give me the data on why I can't do it.
Yeah, 100%. And with content as well, it's a personal thing. Like, I've put on about 10 kilos through my relationship and coming out of my relationship, and she would like to remind me that I put on weight.
Yeah.
And I'm now probably, like, it's crazy, like, before, I've been this big before, you know, I've let myself slip, but I was probably more, so confident, because I was, like, getting a lot of interest from females and doing great shows, and I was like, I'm the fucking man. But it shows that the negative effects of an abusive relationship, what that can have on you, because now I feel huge. Like, you know, I'm not skinny, I know I'm not, but like, I feel like if I walked, we're going to a restaurant later, I'm gonna walk in and people are gonna be like, that guy, you know? He's gonna eat all the food, like, you know?
It's gonna be enough.
You know, do you know what I mean? And that's, so when it comes to, like, you know, we've been amazing, I've had an amazing few days in Athens, one of honestly, one of the best places I've ever been, and you've been a great host, and you're showing me all the sights, and you keep going, let me take some photos of you. I've not looked at those photos.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's, so if I can't even look at a fucking photograph, how am I gonna feel about making content? Yeah. You know?
How was
and
that
that's something I have to get over.
Yeah man.
I drop a few pounds, of course, that will help, but.
But you're never gonna you have to get over the core thing, you gotta love yourself.
Yes, 100%.
I remember my ex-girlfriend in Australia, Chilean girl, we'd be at the beach, and I was 95 to 100 kilos. I'm a short guy, I'm half your fucking height. And we're at the beach, and she's like talking Spanish with the friends. And I was learning Spanish at the time. She basically said that I had bigger tits than her. Oh.
In Spanish?
Yeah.
She didn't think you understood?
Yeah.
Fuck.
And I'm like, oh. I mean, that does or some shit in Spanish. I'm like, that hurt my fucking feelings so much, dude. I'm there doing these ones in the gym. Like, tone them up, bro. Look, at some point, I think, because my friend sent this to me, he's like, how in one part of your life you're so confident and in another you're not? So like, we were at the gym, that's what it was, in Barcelona. He's like, he's the most affable guy ever. He can talk to everybody. Every girl in the gym, he just come up and he's like, how's your workout? They're like, great, thanks. And they're talking. No, he's not trying to get a number, he's not trying to take him on a date, he's just chilling.
Yeah.
Right? And, I go, bro, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. I go there, I'm on my own, I don't want to annoy anyone. He's like, my angle, the confidence for them. He's like, I just saw you do a room of 100 people. What are you talking about? I'm like, that's a good fucking point. Because you do talks. You'll do business talks in front of like 20, 30 millionaires. Like, what?
Yeah.
You get, like, you can't say hello. That's a fucking good point.
It is, like, a good point, yeah.
You're killing it on stage. You have, I mean, you, when you're at a comedy event, you'll talk to every attractive woman there. Right, and there's no anxiety about that, but turn a camera on and you have anxiety? Like, it's like,
I suppose because the way I see it is in my head, I'm a lot better looking, you know, my hairline ain't gone way back yet. I'm 100 kilos, which is like, you know, 10, 11 kilos less than I am now. I don't know. And that's not the case, I believe that I'm better looking. I believe I can get this beautiful woman. But maybe I'm believing that on a lie. Because I am still can get a beautiful woman if I want. Like, I'm not bragging, but I can if I want to. I can get attention, but really, the person they're seeing me now. They're seeing me for who I am.
Yeah.
And really, like, women ain't that shallow, bro. They want a confident, funny.
100%.
You know,
they're not like us. They're not pieces of shit like us.
Yeah. And that's what I am, but it's yeah. So I'll be like, oh,
fight, you think about Krispy Kreme?
Oh, 100%. I'm like, after this fight, we're not, you know, if I won, Krispy Kreme's as a treat. If I lost,
Krispy Kreme as a treat.
And, you know, but I never lost. I lost twice. But I've always had an unhealthy relationship with food, and I've always been quite insecure about my weight because I've fluctuated. I've got a build where that's my rib cage. Right, so like that's 44 inches, just that. So I'm a bigger guy by default. Like if I, you know, like I hold like a rugby player, but I don't need this excess. But I'm a bigger dude. So I've always wanted to be like fucking skinny. Yeah,
man, I see that with myself, and only through call it self hatred am I disciplined. To get down to like, and for me, if I have like a Spartan race or an Ironman or whatever it is, I'll set it and then I'll work towards it. But if I don't set something, can't do it because I'm not pressured.
That's how I am with like, you know, I can't really go, I'm not very good at going to the gym. Just I'll go to the gym and I'll do like 10K on the treadmill and then I'll do some weights and go for a swim or whatever. I like pushing myself because I come from a boxing background. There's always like, one more round, come on, you've got this in you. And I would find the energy, but I'm not good at doing that for myself.
Yeah.
So I always think, well, maybe I'll do like a charity fight.
Yeah.
You know, where I know like, fuck, if you're not fit by the 12th of March, you're getting fucking
beaten
up, you know?
I've done marathons, I've done races.
Yeah.
Where I'm there and I drank the day before, I got fucked up a few days before, I didn't, and I'm there, I'm like, now you're fucking suffering because you didn't do it then.
Yeah.
And now I've done enough races to know you, like 4 or 5 months ahead, like January this year, I knew this October Ironman would be coming, and so like I'm 12K in. So even like I'm a week ahead, and I'll still have some sugar, I'll still have a beer or two, and I'm okay because I've done it for like 10 months of training.
Yeah.
But if I didn't have that pressure, I just let loose. I need pressure. I need anxiety. I need
something I need to, you know. I don't even want to be like ripped or in the kind of shape that you are. I just want to, I've got some nice shirts that don't quite fit right now.
Yeah.
And I just want those shirts to fit.
Dude, these pants are suit pants. I could not fit in this suit. I bought it and I put on 5 kilos.
You know?
And for 3 years, I couldn't get in them.
And just something about that. Like, I don't want to, one, I don't really have the money right now to go out and buy a nice new, like, Lacoste and, you know, like Tommy Hilfiger shirts that I've got. And why should I? Because, you know, I drop 10 kilos, I'll get into them.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, it's a mentality thing.
Always, man. It's such a weird thing because.
But you know, I'm going back to my ex. She, like, I would sometimes, you know, we'd go out for dinner or to meet people, and I'd be like, I'm gonna put my vest on. She'd be like, yeah, put it on. And I think deep down, I wanted her to be like, no.
Fuck it. Who cares?
Like, don't.
Yeah.
Don't put your vest on.
Yeah.
You know, like, I love you. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it's so weird, these small things that. Your girl will say in a relationship, like I had my ex-girlfriend, I'd be like, even just videoing me, right? And me, I'm always delusional, but I'm going to run a marathon. She's like, you can't. And I'm like, and for me, because I didn't communicate at all, I'm like, fuck you in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mum can be a negative person, but I told my mum, she's like, how? I'm like, that's good, you know, I fuck with that.
Mm.
She's like, but how? I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to train, I'm going to lose the weight, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to run a marathon. And I did. And when I was running that marathon, and when I crossed the finish line, I'm thinking, fuck that ex. She thought I couldn't? Mm. Now what do you know? So it's like, it's funny all those small things you say. And you know what I think about when, in those circumstances is, I think this is probably definitely the case for you, especially as such a successful comedian, is like, who are you, who looks up to you? Because like, it's all, like, you never know, really know when you're saying something that could be madly impactful to people. And I've been caught out.
Oh, 100%, what, on stage?
Like, on stage, in a green room, in passing.
Yeah.
Like, I've said things to young entrepreneurs and people who want to be entrepreneurs that they would say to me years and years later. Of course, I fucking never remembered saying it. Like, I wish that I'd, you know, been a bit more articulate. And they're like, that really helped. I'm like, okay, I do say some bullshit, so I hope I'm saying more good stuff than bad stuff. But the things we say to people we care about or that care about us, like, have big impacts.
Well, I always think that with, like, you know, I'm back home, I'm a mental health ambassador. I have bipolar, I've attempted to take my life, and I've struggled with poor mental health. And I always think that with stand-up, you know, that's why I'm very much in the room as well with the audience. Because I'm in the audience with 200 people, and you don't know what they're going through individually.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't know what kind of week they've had. They could have had the shittiest week of their life, depressed, you know, in a unhappy marriage. Whatever it is, you know, lost their job, and you've made them, for 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever, you've been on stage, forget about that and laugh. And laughter is,
I honestly think about that a lot,
is the best medicine, you know, because, and you know, I'm never going to know everybody's story. And sometimes I talk about my mental health struggles on, you know, stage, but I especially do it on podcasts and radio. And I'll have people just like tweet me or like message me on social media, you know, just strangers, and say, hey, I just heard you on the radio, and I've been struggling, but I'm gonna tell my wife tonight, or I'm gonna have book a doctor's appointment, or you know. And these are people that 2 minutes before I went on radio, they didn't know I existed, I didn't know they existed, and they felt enough connection that they could message me. And
it's weird when you finally get a, especially for me being an entrepreneur and never going to college or anything, it's a very lonely journey. And for being a comedian, it can be too.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like you might contact a lot of people, but you don't really make any real contact with a lot of people or any people. And it's like, for me, that's why I always want to give people their money's worth. And you see a lot of comedians that go on stage, you obviously can tell they don't give a fuck. And it's very casual. And very, like, you get what you're given. If you don't like it, fuck off. I'm like, man, like, these people, motherfuckers have worked for every dime that they paid you.
Yeah.
And that's the only stress I ever feel for shows. I'm like, I want to make them, like, when I'm in a show that might not necessarily be well put together, maybe it wasn't curated very well, maybe the comedians, especially open mics, aren't very good. And you get to the end and you're like, I really want to do well, because the show's a disaster. These people have paid.
Yeah.
And they're going to say, that was a shit night.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the weirdest thing. I think the biggest thing, we'll wrap it on this, we're coming up to an hour, is
it's gone quick.
Yeah, you don't really know what your gift is to other people until you start giving it. Because
I suppose I always knew I was funny, and it helps me. It's always helped me in life, you know, make friends and become popular. And it was like, I've seen the world. Like, I'm so thankful for the gift I've been given, and I don't want that to come across as arrogant, like, you know. But without that, like, you know, I come from a very kind of poor working class background, and I've been very lucky, and I've been lucky because I had the ability to make people laugh. Even this few days, you know, last night we went to this open air cinema, and the film was terrible, but I kept on looking up at the Parthenon and being like, you live a good life, you know?
Yeah.
You're lucky, and I only live that life because I make people laugh.
Yeah. You know? That's the thing, and I think a lot of people, especially young people, especially young men, you feel like you don't have anything to offer. You think the world and society doesn't care.
Yeah.
And I too had heaps of anxiety and depression in the last few years, trying to be an entrepreneur, trying to make ends meet, family stuff too, and I just always felt like if I slipped through the cracks, which I did, no one would care. And a lot of the time I didn't care, but I think it was Jordan Peterson who said this, is like, don't underestimate the hole that you would leave in other people's lives. Like it's, and that's that, for some reason, that one video, this one reel, kept me going for a little while. And I look at, obviously all my life has been, professional life has been entrepreneurship until 3 months ago. And then some comedy on the side under a different name. I'm like, let's bring it all together. I'm going to start making videos. And I make one little video, my first Greenglish podcast. I'm like, you know, I'm going to talk about history, just me, no one else was on. And I cut that reel, got 150,000 views. I was like, I want a whole fucking series. I'm like, all right. And I start talking about history, which, as you've known for the last few days, I can't shut the fuck up about. Yeah. And my little fascination, people love ridiculously, millions and millions of views. I'm like, you don't know your gift is valuable to others until you start giving it. And you get like ashamed about it. Like I remember talking with friends or with girls about history and they're just like, wrap it up, like, fucking yeah. And now I'm meeting girls because I'm talking about history. I'm like, fuck yeah, this is amazing. What?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll wrap it up. Thanks for coming
Thank
to my nation.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
David Alfie Ward on Instagram. I'm going to put it in the description.
Yeah, please give me a follow if you're, I'll let you know where I'm gigging. I gig all over Europe and, extended further than that sometimes. But if you're in London, let me know.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right. See you in the next one.